Let's welcome Mr. Richie Haven.
Still remember Max Yasker's Farm, Sunday afternoon, August 17th, 1969, 49 years ago, the last day of Woodstock. This is what Max had to say. I'm a farmer. I don't know how to speak to 20 people at one time, let alone a crowd like this, but I think you people have proven something to the world, not only to the town of Bethel or Sullivan County or New York State, you've proven something to the world. This is the largest group of people ever assembled in one place. We've had no idea there would be this size group, and because of that, you've had quite a few inconveniences as far as water and food and so forth. Your producers have done a mammoth job to see that you're taken care of. They'd enjoy a vote of thanks. But above that, the important thing that you've proven to the world is that 500,000 kids, and I call you kids because I have children that are older than you are, 500,000 young people can get together and have 3 days of fun and music and have nothing but fun and music. And God bless you for it. For perhaps a brief moment in time that weekend, the better angels of our nature. Play some tunes today from that day. Yours in American history and in the spirit of the Age of Aquarius, Professor Thomas W. Colbrisi. The hour. Gotta love that music. I love that music. And I just thought I'd take a moment here out of the madness that is everything that is going on. And just, it's unbelievable. It's 42 years ago. Oh my God. Unbelievable. No, I wasn't there. But I know a lot of people were, right? As a matter of fact, if you talk to people, enough people over the age of 60, I think you'll find that probably 80% of the people you talk to say, yeah, I was there. But the hell of it is, you have to be around 60 or older to have been there. Think about that, you ex-hippies. Get your mind around that, huh? Ravi Shankar and Melanie and Arlo Guthrie and Joan Baez, Country Joe, John Sebastian, Santana, Incredible String Band, Can't Heat, Mountain. You remember Mountain? Leslie West and Mountain? Oh, my God. Grateful Dead, CCR, Janis Joplin, Sly and the Family Stone, The Who, Jefferson Airplane, Joe Cocker, Country Joe, 10 Years After, The Band, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Johnny Winter, Edgar Winter, CSNY, the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, Sha-na-na, and Jimi Hendrix. Such a long time ago, huh? Good Lord have mercy, such a long time ago. This hour is sponsored by Philip Lee. And his message, check out my original music and remixes on SoundCloud.com. SoundCloud.com/DJ-Philly. All right. Thanks for the sponsorship, Philip. Go to his website. Go ahead. SoundCloud.com. SoundCloud.com/DJ-Philly. And thanks, Philip, for the sponsorship. Okay, from all that peace and togetherness music, you know, that's one thing that the right wing hates the most just about everything. That whole Woodstock thing, you know, the whole anti-war, peace and freedom, the whole Jesus aspect of it, you know, love your brother and your sister as you love yourself. Ooh, that is subversive. That is bad stuff. Love your brother and your sister like yourself. What kind of nonsense is that? Who came up with that? Honest John the Commie or somebody? Where did that come from? Love your brother and your sister like yourself, right? Switching from that to something I heard on the news today and did some research. One in five American children are now living in poverty, according to a new report. One in five, 20% of kids in the United States, the land of the free, the home of the brave, are living in poverty. Really? One in five. 14.7 million children in families with incomes less than $21,000 a year. And child poverty increased in 38 states from the year 2000 to the year 2009. Who was the president then? What political party strangled America then? What crime family destroyed the country? It wasn't Reagan. It wasn't Clinton. They may have had a hand in it. But the Bush crime family did more damage to this country than any administration ever in the history of this country. Child poverty increased in 38 states while those filthy bastards were destroying the country. Anybody care? Mississippi is the state with the highest level of childhood poverty, 31%. 31% of the kids in Mississippi live in poverty. New Hampshire is the state with the smallest level, only 11%. And when you look at a map that was put out by the Daily Mail of the UK about child poverty in the United States, when you look at this map, you see that the worst of it are the states of the old Confederacy, with one exception, Georgia and Virginia. But North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, and then you have to throw in Arizona and New Mexico. Those are the states with the highest level of childhood poverty. The land of the free and the home of the brave, huh? We'll be right back.
Defining anger management, back to Mike Malloy.
Scared about the future, you wonder what you're gonna do. Feeling so small, not a thing that a one.
21 past the hour.
Piercing through your heart.
I got an email here from Kelly in Wellington, Colorado. He writes, Mike, Rick Perry actually intends to disregard science as a matter of opinion. I read on Huffington Post that, quote, Perry said global warming is based on scientists manipulating data. He said he wouldn't devote federal resources to battling the environmental concern, end quote. Seriously, Mike, I've got to raise kids here. And this is so far out there. What is going on? How can this be? This is on top of his answer for the droughts in Texas is to pray for rain. And the Arctic? This is an actual quote from the State of Texas website. Quote, now therefore I, Rick Perry, governor of Texas, under the authority vested in me by the Constitution and statutes of the State of Texas, do hereby proclaim the 3-day period from Friday, April 22nd, 2011 to Sunday, April 24th, 2011 as days of prayer for rain in the State of Texas. I urge Texans of all faiths and traditions to offer prayers on those days for the healing of our land, the rebuilding of our communities, and the restoration of our normal way of life, end quote. A proclamation up to God, right? Back to Kelly's email. Last night you asked if we were kidding about supporting Obama because of the Supreme Court. To answer you, no, I wasn't. Then I'm only 36. I'm overwhelmed and in disbelief. I was hoping to enjoy Obama's presidency. I'm right in the middle of raising a 2, a 5, a 10, and a 13-year-old. I'm on my third shot at creating a life for my family, now in Colorado following the economic collapse that started for me in 2001 and has yet to let up. I mean, we were slightly better in 2007 and 2008, but all that stopped in 2009, a year from which we are just now recovering after having gotten a loan modification and moved 1,600 miles for some more upward mobility. But seriously, I'm looking at our government, which is awash with corporate money. It is a corrupt disaster. My ex spent a lot of time in South America working towards changing their constitution to be more beneficial to U.S. companies. I never thought that happened in America, but when I saw it, I recognized it. What can we do but try to get justices into the Supreme Court that will help to get money out of politics? Or are you just saying that it's too late? I'm really asking, Mike. Kelly in Wellington. Am I saying that it's too late? Yeah, I really am. It's too late for our system. It is too far into corruption. It is too debased and ruined with money. And the people who accept the money are the people who make the rules about whether or not to accept money or not accept it. Power never votes itself out of office. Never. especially money power. Am I saying it's too late, Kelly? Yeah, it is. It's way too late for the kind of religious slash capitalist slash almost fascist system that we have in this country now. Is it too late? Yes, it's too late. So to reform it. Anybody disagree with that? If you think that our system is reformable, then I would ask you one simple question. Why hasn't that happened in the 35 or 40 years since it began to really crash and burn? Nobody, Democrat or Republican, nobody, not in the executive branch, not in the judicial, not in the legislative, nobody, not one with the power to effect a change has tried to make a change. And you can tell me about Bernie Sanders and a handful of members of Congress, men and women, who may have tried to make a stand, but every single one of them were washed away. And some of them were assassinated to be removed. Is it too late? Yes, it's too late. Absolutely too late. So what to do? Keep in mind what I'm saying is too late to reform the system. It's not going to happen. And anyone who tells you otherwise is I don't know, just some kind of an airhead freak. How is the system going to be reformed? Who's going to do it? When's it going to start? Where? How? By what? We're going to pray it away? The system has to be removed and replaced. Removed and replaced. If you're serious, Kelly, you said, I'm really asking, Mike. Well, there's my answer. It has to be removed and replaced.
Before the hour,
here's an email from Joanne in Seattle that I will take slight issue with, but just slight, Joanne. Mike, I'm wondering why I have not heard any of the progressives talking about this news item below, but can't stop talking about Rick Perry. These stories are important and need your help getting the word out, because mainstream media won't do it. Fox sure won't, and they all talk about the dumb Republican candidates. And here's the item. Over the next 2 weeks, thousands of people are expected to descend on Washington, D.C. for the Tar Sands Action to protest the Keystone XL oil pipeline. It promises to be one of the largest displays of civil disobedience on climate change that this country has ever seen, and a landmark event in the relatively short history of the climate movement. To get a sense of the mood in D.C., there's no better way than to read Bill McKibben's op-ed that was published in today's Washington Post, titled A Watershed Moment for Obama on Climate Change. I don't know if you can get past their paywall, but it's WashingtonPost.com. Joanne goes on, the Republicans are going to try to guilt Obama into okaying this pipeline by using the jobs argument. Even though these are jobs that create poison, degradation, bad health, and huge climate change impacts. Please help this cause and leave the Perry stories to the less critical thinkers.
We need the progressive radio talkers to talk about the stuff the mainstream media is ignoring and, in fact, shy away from. Joanna, Seattle. Okay, the slight contention, yeah, I did talk about this and promoted the website and got fairly heavily into, I didn't have a guest on, but I got into this action. It's and talked about the September 3rd action at noon in Lafayette Park in front of the White House. And it starts this Saturday. I think, what's today? This is the 17th. This is the 30th. Yeah, it starts this Saturday and goes until September 3rd. And the reason this is going on is because Obama is going to decide as early as September whether to light a fuse to the largest carbon bomb in North America. And that bomb is the massive tar sands field in Canada's Alberta province. And the fuse is the 1,700-mile-long Keystone XL pipeline that would transport this dirtiest of petroleum fuels all the way to, you guessed it, Texas refineries. Obama needs to see people turn out in full force in order to veto the pipeline. Who's going to be at this rally? Bill McKibben, whose op-ed is in the Washington Post today. Naomi Klein, leaders of the North American climate movement, young people, indigenous leaders, farmers, landowners, and anyone else impacted by this pipeline. Now, we did talk about it, Joanne, and I don't know how to avoid talking about these candidates on the Republican side. There was a piece in the New York Times today called titled "Crashing the Tea Party," and it strips away the facade of the Tea Party, the tea baggers, people like Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry and Sarah Palin, the rest of these animals. It strips away the facade put there by, among others, mainstream media and by the liars themselves as to what the teabaggers really are. It is a group of people determined to put fundamentalist, crazed Christian operatives in charge of the country. And I think that's important to talk about, because if these people aren't exposed, and I realize a lot of people are doing the exposing, and they're exposing themselves every time they open their goddamn mouths. But if they're not exposed, you know, I don't talk about Rick Perry or Michelle Bachmann because they're Hollywood stars or musicians or a little gossip about, you know, what's going on here, what's going on there. The reason I talk about them, I don't know about other people. The reason I talk about them is because I see these people as being an enormous threat to everything. Not just the United States, to everything. Everything. Because keep in mind, what these people really, truly, deep in their heart of hearts really want, what they really want, above everything else, what they really, really want is the rapture. And anything they can do to bring about this global destruction, which is part of their theology, it's part of it. They want to murder the Jews as soon as they've convinced the Jews to hold on to what the Christians call the Holy Land so that Jesus has a place to land, I guess. And then all the Jews will be given a choice, and Pastor Hagee will be one of the ones with the sharpest knife as he goes around slicing their heads off. This is sick stuff! And it's very, very dangerous. We are slipping backwards. So, yes, I support the tar sands action. I do. I do. And a month after that, October 6th, I will be in D.C. for what I hope is a massive rally to tell these sons of bitches that the American people are no longer going to put up with this. Any of it. But Jesus, Joanne, cut me a little slack. I mean, And I realize I'm not trying to get this personal, because I realize your frustration. I know. But this is another example. I hope a million people turn out for this tar sands resistance. I really do. I hope the jails, what is it called, the one I went to, the North Metro Detention Center outside of Washington, I hope all the jails fill up with protesters to the point where there's no place to put people. I hope that happens. And you know what? When that does happen, when a million people show up and the arrests begin, do you know what Barack Obama is going to do? He's going to sign the goddamn legislation anyway. Which is not to say, don't be there. For God's sake, be there. And come back a month later. But Barack Obama is not of the political persuasion where he would look out and see a million people protesting. And why does he need a million people to protest it? This is counter to everything that this country needs right now in order to survive. Barack Obama is not going to lead the American people out of the wilderness, so you might as well forget that part of it. I think it's a good idea to put a million people in Washington, D.C., maybe the legislative branch will somehow prevent Obama, I don't know if this requires executive authorization. Obama just signs off on it, or if it requires an actual bill. I don't know. But with a million people in D.C., maybe the legislators would take a look outside of their windows and say, well, maybe we better not. Although I doubt that, too. Do you realize that 60% of the members of Congress right now, 60% of the members of Congress, both houses, are millionaires or multimillionaires? Did you know that hideous fact? So, Ed Markey, who is on the Energy and Commerce Committee, a Democrat of Massachusetts. Is Ed Markey, I don't know, is Ed Markey leading the resistance to this? Is anybody in Congress? So, yeah, I appreciate what you wrote. And I wish more of the so-called liberals on radio would notice some of these things. And I hope a million people show up on September 6th and October 6th. I really do. So, but are we in agreement? September 3rd and October 6th. Are we in agreement, though? And this is a part that's really killer for me, Joanne, is the fact that I would just like to know if anybody out there really believes that Barack Obama would respond to a million people and say to hell with the tar sands thing, huh? By the way, this hour has been is sponsored by Philip Lee. Check out his original music and his remixes. Just do this. You need a break. SoundCloud.com/DJ-Philly. SoundCloud.com/DJ-Philly. I'll be right back. before the hour. And this hour has been sponsored by Philip Lee. Thank you, Philip. We can do Philip a good turn here by checking out his original music and his remixes on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/DJ-Philly. soundcloud.com/DJ-Philly. Thanks, Philip. Nimble Civet writes, you read an email from Kelly. Yeah, the one I read a few minutes ago. In your answer, excuse me, in your answer you stated that there's no hope for reform of the system. Sadly, I must say that I've come to the same conclusion. I believe a key component of setting things right is seizing the wealth and power of the nation's financial system through political revolution. And no, I'm not a Marxist. I don't even know if Marx was a Marxist. The only Marx I read was a 500-page compendium of excerpts, so I'm not exactly an expert on the subject. Anyway, let's say that after the 2012 elections, the best-case scenario from our wildest imagination came to pass. After the election, Congress proceeds to hold hearings to investigate the manipulation of the financial system for the last 20 years. What would be exposed is that the whole system has been so thoroughly corrupted that it has to be scrapped and rebuilt. The international financial market is so intertwined that this would have repercussions around the globe. So the really scary thing is that if we upset the current power structure, global chaos may be unavoidable. It's hard to know what the responsible thing to do is. How can progressives in good conscience advocate for actions which might result in negative, unforeseen consequences? From Nimble Civet. Well, I'm not so sure that a breakdown here, an investigation or revelations into how corrupt everything is and the necessity to tear it down, I'm talking nonviolently if possible, tear it down and restructure the political and financial system in this country. I don't think it would be that difficult. Now, as far as the global intertwining of resources, yeah, there would be some asses burned fairly badly, but they would be the asses belonging to people who set this thing up to begin with. So I don't think the smell of burning asses would be all that bad around the globe. That's A. B, I think a nation, no matter how intertwined they are globally, their financial shenanigans, when chaos comes, it's every nation for itself. And I think a lot of societies, nations, political systems, there would be some terrible things that would happen, there's no doubt. But I think most countries would immediately pull back and say, okay, we're out of the European Union, we're out of this alliance, we're out of that agreement. We have to take care of our own. Now, yeah, I already see the creepy Hollywood movie script for that kind of a film. Yeah, I sure do. But what is the alternative? I mean, if we continue, it's death staring us in the face. Not just economic death, but planetary death. I mean, it really is. We've come to that point. It's happening in our generation. Here it is. Here it is. I mean, it's really here. It's here. Here it is. If we don't change things, reform, truly, I believe this as deeply as I believe anything. Reform at this point, we passed that tipping point a couple of decades ago. I don't think reform is possible at all. Matter of fact, let me take out the qualifier. It is not possible. In my opinion, reform is not possible. There are too many negative forces in this country that are determined to not let reform take place. Most of them are the extreme wealthy, but some of them are the religious fanatics who want the chaos. There is a political faction in this country that is gaining power. Now, the op-ed in the New York Times today about the breaking down of the Tea Party kind of disagrees with this. But there is a movement in this country, not just teabaggers. I'm talking about these religious crazy people who are determined to cause the kind of chaos that is as bloody as anything we've ever seen on this planet in order to satisfy their insane God. This is what it's come to, in order to satisfy their interpretation of their non-existent insane God. But that's how bad it's gotten. So, a collapse, global chaos. I would be willing to bet against that, because not that there wouldn't be nations that would experience some temporary horror, but look at all the nations that are now because of the global economic system. And the perversion of these religious wars, no matter where they're occurring. The latest victim that everybody is looking at, and the pictures are out there every night, is Somalia. And not so long ago, it was Chad. And before that, it was Sudan. And before that, it was Bangladesh. And before... The system. It has to be replaced. And I don't know. What other tack is there left to take? We'll be right back. Something here from Prairie too, but I lost it. Oh well, I've got this from him regarding the teabaggers and whether or not they're going to disappear, as was suggested in this op-ed piece this morning at the Times. Prairie 2 writes, the teabaggers may be on the decline, but the name was made up anyway. These people aren't going away. Keep in mind, the Nazis, while elected, were not the majority in Germany, but took total power anyway. So, yeah, that is something to consider. I mean, it's just hate to drag out, you know, the old butchering, murderous Nazis, but they're the ones who wrote the book. I mean, on this sort of stuff. And we talk about a certain element of state totalitarianism, we quote and mention George Orwell and 1984 over and over and over again. So the Nazis are the sine qua non where it concerns a minority group of right-wing insane people taking over a country. A country that was... The Nazis were very Christian in their attitude. I mean, how many times did Hitler talk about his relationship with Jesus and God? Was it the SS or was it just a regular German soldier that had Gott mit uns on their belt buckle? So, you know, it may be a tired analogy, but the Nazis represent, the Nazi Party represents the destruction of Germany, a horror for the German people. And not, you know, not just the Germans, but I mean a horror for them because Nazism arose in the ranks. Teabaggerism, Beckism, this right-wing insanity is coming up. And who was it? Fascism will come to this country wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross. I'm having one of those goddamn senior moments. Oh, I hate that. Oh, it is so irritating. It is so irritating. All right, let me see if I can make sense out of what Prairie 2 wrote, because he's got some grammatical screw-ups in here, and it's sometimes hard to read what he writes. Regarding the tar sands pipeline, he writes that falls under existing legislation. All Obama is signing is the declaration that the pipeline is in the national interest. Since the typical, hell, probably all of them, the typical independent voter believes that to be in the national interest, of course he'll sign it. Getting reelected is job one. And you must admit, he has every reason to rationalize that a second term will be in the national interest as well. What would happen to the country with the President Perry? Obama probably sees this like burning the village on the approach to Moscow, but the sacrifice must be made. Obama could take a liberal tack, but given the track record of the American voter, would that be wise? I honestly don't know the answer to that, but I know what the Republicans can't wait to do. So, yeah, I mean, the tar sands thing, that legislation, Obama's going to sign it. Sinclair Lewis. Thanks, Michael. Damn it. Just drew a total blank on that. And thanks, Bill. What was the book? It Can't Happen Here. Was that the title of it? I think it was. So the action that starts this Saturday and goes to September 3rd. An attempt at massive civil disobedience to stop this. I don't want to be the skunk at the picnic and point out that this president does not respond. Very few presidents in any longer respond to demonstrations. Come on. Not that I'm saying don't do it. Hell yeah, do it. Instead of 1 million, let's get 2 million. And this action on October 6th, let's get 5 million. Maybe it'll scare somebody. But you see, the government is not afraid of us. I was talking to a friend the other day. He was had business in France, and he was in Paris several months ago. The last time, I think it was the French truckers or the French farmers, and they didn't like the fact that the government of France, in trying to deal with their financial crisis, was going to raise the retirement age from 60 to 62, and the whole goddamn country came to a standstill. And the legislation didn't happen. But we don't do that here. You see, we don't do that. And I realize all the reasons. We're not a homogeneous population. We have so many different groups in this country, different racial and ethnic and cultural and religious and all these breakdowns. We're a nation of immigrants. We do not have a history that goes back beyond, I'm talking about the Europeans and the people who came since then. I'm not talking about the indigenous people. I'm talking about the people who are now polluting and destroying and running things. We only go back 230 years. Jesus Christ, that's yesterday to most other cultures and societies around the planet. So, I'm not advocating against demonstrations. I got to a point where the low number of people who turned out just became so, just demoralizing. In the literal sense of that word, just demoralizing. I participated in demonstrations where there'd be 500,000 people or 300. And the thing that I've noticed over the past 30 years, well, actually, more than that, 40, since the bad old days of Richard Nixon, is the steady decline. Oh, occasionally, like prior to the war crimes that this country committed against Iraq, led by the war criminals, Bush and Cheney. Prior to that, yeah, there were massive demonstrations in the United States, globally. What effect did it have? They weren't big enough. They weren't big enough in this country. You put 500,000 people on the streets of Washington, D.C., and it's just yawn. Who cares? You'd be lucky to get that on television. Not that television is the pivot point of whether or not something is important, but it lets other people know that 500,000 people did turn out. But 500,000? Forget about it. You want some action? Do you want resistance to build? Put 10 million people in the streets. And it doesn't have to be just in Washington. Put them in San Francisco and Los Angeles, New York, Washington, Detroit, Minneapolis. I guess that's about it, right? Seattle. I guess that's it. I almost said Charleston. Oh, yeah, okay, that'll happen. Atlanta. Yeah, sure. Okay. Wichita. Mm-hmm. Denver? Maybe. We'll be right back. My eyes just hurt my brain.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Your favorite Republican member of Congress may want to start charging you to attend one of his so-called or her so-called town hall meetings. Yeah, have you heard about this? This is from Raw Story. Apparently, it's an effort to avoid the free-for-all town halls that have raised a lot of hell with during these congressional recesses, you know, where the member of Congress, oh, yeah, I'm going to have a town hall meeting, and then people show up and really expect to make a point. And, of course, Republicans hate that. Republican members of Congress, these weasels, what you're supposed to do if you're a constituent, you're supposed to show up and bobble your head up and down. This is what Limbaugh has spent 30 years trying to teach people. This is what Beck and Hannity and the rest of these jackasses have spent their entire radio careers trying to teach people. No, 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 no. You sit there and bobble your head up and down. Bobble your head. Bobble your head. Don't do anything but bobble your head up and down. Don't go around. Bobble your head just up and down. Do what we say. Do what we say. Bobble your head now all day. Bobble your head. Bobble your head! But some people haven't been doing that. Representative Paul Ryan, this freak from Wisconsin, the guy who is the head of the budget committee, and other Republican members of Congress, they've decided to start charging admission to their home district appearances. For example, young Master Ryan will speak September 6th to the Whitnall Park Rotary Club in Greenfield, Wisconsin. Admission to the event will be $15 per person. Ryan has no free public town hall appearances scheduled during the recess, which is on right now. The last time he held a free town hall, back in April, remember the video? He was booed while trying to explain his proposal for the federal budget, which included all those cuts to various social programs, and other Republicans around the country were on the receiving end of similar stuff. Ryan even had the police remove one person from a town hall event in Racine, Wisconsin. Yeah, how dare you show up and ask me questions? You're supposed to bobble your head. Bobble your head. That's all you're supposed to do. Up and down. Not round and round. Just bobble your head. Up and down. Now do what we say. Do what we say. Bobble your head. Up and down. Up and down. The Center for Responsive Politics spokesman, Michael Beckel, told Raw Story, quote, constituents deserve easy and free access to the elected officials, end quote. Well, constituents do. Corporate America. The money that has ended. Our system's already ended. You know, my talk about tearing it down and building up a new one, as if the system that we have now is still functioning. It looks like it's functioning, right? Huh? Until you start checking to find out what's really going on in the country. And where we're just kind of slouching toward with nothing stopping that forward movement into the pit of chaos. But, constituents, I'm sorry to disagree with Michael Beckel of the Center for Responsive Politics, but constituents are getting free and easy access to their elected officials. Okay, not free. Well, yes, it is free because they own these puppets. They own them. It's just like owning anything else. I bought a new Bentley today. Oh, really? I bought a new representative. Really? What was wrong with your old representative? Ah, she was starting to piss me off. I don't like her attitude. Well, what'd you do with her? Let's just say I replaced her. I have a new one now. This guy is very easy to manipulate. Ah, well, I guess my Bentley isn't such a big deal then, huh? Michael Beckel also told Raw Story, quote, elected officials should have abundant opportunities for interaction with constituents in town hall meetings are one good way to ensure that citizens can have their voices heard in the political process. Excuse me again, Michael Beckel, but elected officials do have abundant opportunities for interaction with their constituents. It's called money. That's the interaction. Members of Congress, you can show up and tell them that you're a single father and you have these three little kids and you're homeless and you just desperately need something that will get you back to work. You don't want a handout, but could I please go back to work? And the school that my oldest here is in second grade, the school he goes to is falling down, and please, kind member of Congress, could you do something? And that guy will be shown the door. He will be escorted out, and if he puts up any resistance, he'll take his children from him and put him in jail. This is how it works. But if you're a multi-zillionaire and you show up with your fat-ass checkbook and say, hey, listen, tell you what I want here. I want you to lower the capital gains tax even further. Let's put it down around 6%, all right? Oh, and here's a check for $5 million for your re-election campaign. Oh, my God, of course, sir! You say you're men.
Unfiltered with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Yeah, Michael brings up a point here. Michael and Roswell, another change from seems like so long ago. Nixon used to agonize over the demonstrations. Remember his going to the Lincoln Memorial to rap with the kids, desperate as he was to get them on board with their own destruction? Bush just went to his ranch for vacation. Obama goes to Camp David. Or he goes to, he's going to take a 10-day golfing vacation? Sure, why not? Everybody is entitled to a vacation, just so few of us really get one. I think the reason Nixon did that, Michael, is because he was insane. I mean that. I think Nixon had something very, very, not debilitatingly insane, if that's a word. But don't forget, towards the end there, Kissinger insisted, when he was Secretary of State, he insisted that the nuclear codes be kept away from Nixon. Remember that? And in Kissinger's hands, from one mass murderer to another, right? Of course, Nixon didn't, I don't think he really cared. Not only was he an alcoholic, but he also was clinically unscrewed. He just was. So, but I get your point, yeah. Constituents deserve easy and free access to their elected officials. That, doesn't that sound so, oh, I don't know, what, 1950s? Huh? 1950s? I've got a comment just one more time. I mentioned it the other day, but it was in passing about the massive slaughter that occurred in Iraq. Was it Friday after prayers? Or no, Monday at the close of Ramadan. 89 people killed, hundreds and hundreds wounded. And given the state of the medical care available in Iraq, thanks to 20 years of our bombing and killing in that country. Yeah, 20. 1991 is when that started, if you remember. People who are severely wounded in these bomb attacks have, I don't know, I'll guess here, but a less than even chance of making it through. So we get the initial death report, right? We don't hear the follow-up, how many people died subsequent to all these attacks, suicide bombs, car bombs, just madness. Raed Jarar is an Iraqi-American blogger and political analyst based in Washington, D.C. He was in Iraq 2 weeks ago, and he said today quote, the coordinated wave of attacks that killed and injured hundreds of Iraqis this week were not religious, sectarian, or ethnic in nature. And unlike what many U.S. pundits have been claiming, these attacks are yet another reason for the United States to leave Iraq and end this war that started in 1991. All public opinion polls and all the results of past elections in Iraq show that the majority of Iraqi public see the U.S. military presence as part of the problem and not part of the solution. Extending what Iraqis view as a foreign military occupation of their country will not solve the real reasons behind the violence, the real reasons that have prevented Iraq from having a strong government and functional armed forces that are able to protect the country's sovereignty and stability and provide the public with the necessary basic needs. Iraqis and Americans agree that Iraq is a broken country, almost a failed state. The question then at hand is, who will be able to fix it? It has been more than 8 years, more than 3,000 days since the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and President Obama promised the U.S. public and the world multiple times that he will abide by this deadline and withdraw the last U.S. soldier from Iraq. It is long overdue that the U.S. quit wasting treasure and blood in this disastrous 20-year war. End quote, Raed Jarrar, Iraqi-American blogger. And back to Rick Perry for just a moment. Oh my God! I look up on the TV monitor here, and there's his face. Jesus God, this is an evil, sick-looking man, isn't he? What is it about these right-wingers? It's in their eyes. Even Kermit Romney or Mitt Romney, whatever the hell his name is, even Mitt Romney, I mean, they just all have this demented kind of there, not there look, you know? Anyway, how long ago was it that Perry was saying that secession was one scenario on the table for frustrated Texans, right? And then how long ago was it this week where he said, I love America. I love, man, goddamn right, boy. And he likes to use the term, adios, mofo. That's his famous interview sign-off. Adios, mofo. Really? Oh, my goodness. Anyway, remember when he was talking secession? This guy loves the United States, doesn't he? Yeah, he does. Goddamn religious freak. The BP oil spill, that might have been an act of God, according to Perry, instead of corporate errors. Act of God. And according to Perry, if the Federal Reserve puts more money in the U.S. system, it's a treasonous act. Head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, will have committed treason. Why do these sons of bitches always, when they disagree with somebody, why do they always call them a traitor? A traitor to what? It's always treason. It's never, I really disagree with that. So much so I'd like to punch you in the nose. No, it's never that. It's treason! Treason! You know what that is. It's the best defense is a good offense. You know, Bush and Cheney used that so often during the 8 years, and everybody that spoke for them, that sick son of a bitch, who was that spokesman, Kathy, one of the press secretaries, what was his name? Bush. Now Bush is, before them. Ari Fleischer, thanks. That's all from Ari Fleischer. I forget what I was saying. Something about their eyes. Adios, mofo. And the way media treat these bastards, even Huffington Post, listen to this. Just 4 days after launching his GOP presidential run, the man from Paint Creek, Texas, already is showing off a colorful tongue. Colorful tongue. The 61-year-old with maybe the most famous jogging while armed story ever, don't attack my dog or you might get shot if you're a coyote, may emerge as the most quotable candidate in the Republican field. This is from Huffington Post. Why get all folksy with this bastard? Why act like, oh, yeah, he's real quotable. He might be the most quotable candidate in the Republican field. Oh, well, yeah, he just, you know, he has that famous interview sign-off, adios, mofo. Yeah. This is what media does. And Huffington Post, of course, is mainstream media. And then poor Obama, he said yesterday that he was inclined to cut the governor some slack since it was so early in his run. This is after Perry's been saying things that the troops, the military forces, the United States is out there doing everything for corporations under the direction of Barack Obama. And Perry had the gall to suggest that he, Perry, in a very oblique way, but he, Perry, would get more respect from the soldiers than Obama, because you know what? I was a captain in the Air Force. Insinuating that the commander-in-chief, dig it, the commander-in-chief, right, does not get respect from the troops. But Perry would. Adios, mofo. I'll get your respect. Here, let me show you how to shoot this gun. Oops. God damn, I think I just shot myself in the gut. Oh, no. I'm about to die. Oh, here I go. Thud. Obama said, I think that everybody who runs for president, it probably takes them a little bit of time before they start realizing that this isn't like running for governor or running for senator or running for Congress. You got to be a little more careful about what you say. Mr. Obama, why didn't you both were in Iowa on your bus tours or whatever. Why didn't you find out where he was and send one of those drone missiles into his bus? Or if not that, why didn't you, you know, force his bus to the side of the road and get out and say, Rick Perry, bring your ass here, take off your coat, roll up your sleeves like you do behind those hay bales, Mr. President, and whoop his ass? No, wouldn't do that, huh? About 9 minutes before the hour. And again, for the October 6th protest in Washington, D.C., you can go to the website and get all the information you want. October2011.org. October2011.org. Okay? It's all there. All you might want to know, next hour, you probably don't want to stick around and hear it because I've decided to something I want to share with you from that Bob Cuddy wrote at the San Luis Obispo Tribune. And also more on Obama. Oh, and by the way, to all the people who wrote to me today, and I think we had, and I was surprised by this, we must have had about, I got 11 or 12 emails, I think Kathy got about the same number. Yeah, that was blue last night. We didn't realize it until this morning. We opened up some email, and there were a bunch of you saying, man, that guy from Toledo was blue. And so we listened to that part of last night's program. And, yep, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, it sure was. We're just going to have to figure. See, because I told Blue, I just, you know, take a six-month break, pal. You know, enough's enough. You need to take a break. And it's pretty slick. I had a feeling the conversation was going the wrong way, you know. But we even went so far as to look at the two voice prints on, what is that thing you use? Cool Edit. We looked at the sound graph, is that what you call it? Yep. So, Blue, if you're listening, okay, you got it, passes. Not that, you know, not that I too much give a damn, but I just hate people putting people on the air under false pretenses. You know, I've always hated that. You know. You, if you're regular listening to this program, you hear some of these people get past, and Kathy's astute screening. Oh, by the way, what we were talking about the other night, remember about Shell Oil getting ready to, Obama's getting ready to, already has approved Shell Oil's plan to begin drilling for oil in the Beaufort Sea off the Arctic Ocean coast of Alaska. Obama's already approved that. And, you know, I get in one of my rants about, you know, this is just unbelievable, and how much danger there is. Shell drilling in the Arctic Ocean off the Alaska coast. Well, from the Independent of the UK, more than 200 tons of oil entered the North Sea following a leak in an offshore platform, according to estimates from its operator, Shell. The spill, the worst in the region for more than a decade, began at the Gannet Alpha platform 12 miles east of Aberdeen on Wednesday, last Wednesday, a week ago. Estimates have only now been released by the firm. Yeah, why should they tell people earlier? I'm surprised they told anybody in a week. It's 150 miles away. Surely in the North Sea it would have disappeared, right? So there's complaints now from environmental groups that there's been a lack of transparency. Oh, please! A lack of transparency. Yeah. Shell said about 216 tons of oil or 1,300 barrels spilled into the sea so far. In a statement today, Glenn Cayley, technical director of Shell's exploration and production activities in Europe, said, quote, "Oh, this is a significant spill in the context of annual amounts of oil spilled in the North Sea." Did you hear that? Annual, in the context of annual amounts spilled in the North Sea. I mean, it happens all the time. It happens every year. In 2009, it was 50.93 tons. And, well, you know, this is over 200 tons. So, yeah, in the context of the annual spillage into the North Sea caused by our drilling, yeah, this was four times as big. Wow. He went on to say, but we care about the environment, and we regret that the spill happened. We have taken it very seriously and responded promptly to it. He went on to say, well, you know, the high winds and waves over the weekend have led to a substantial reduction in the size of the oil sheen, as can be seen from the current levels on the water. So the sheen's gone, so shut up. Nobody swims over here anyway. What the hell's wrong with you? We take it all very seriously. He said, we continue to expect that the oil sheen will disperse due to wave action and that will not reach the shore. And next. And this is the company that Barack Obama has authorized to begin slant drilling in the relatively shallow seas off the coast of Alaska. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. I keep coming back to the same thing, I understand, but I don't know how to not mention this over and over and over again, and in some instances really hammer on it. Mr. President, your base is going to desert you. The core of the Democratic Party is going to figure that since you've declared yourself to be a liberal Republican, and you've determined to govern from the center-right, that there's no point in voting for you. There's no point in going to work for you. There's no point in knocking on doors or churning out election propaganda or hauling people to the polls. You know, your immediate predecessor said it as articulately as he could. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, blank, 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 won't get fooled again. You remember. So, Mr. President, all the talk the other day, you know, behind all those hay bales, all that talk about a jobs program that you're going to design and present to people this fall, where you been, pal? Of course, it's never too late. That's the art of politics. It's never too late to produce something that, in your case, would be just about a 90-degree turn to the left. That's pretty much what it's going to take. You don't have to do a 180, but you're going to have to do like a 90-degree turn. You're going to have to convince an awful lot of Democrats that you represent the core principles of the Democratic Party and that you are willing to fight for a change for your base. I mean, look at your opponents. Look at your opponents. They go right to the base. And you know why? Because if they convince the base of the Republican Party, which the base now are crazed religious cultists and a few people who really don't have any problem with taxes, except insofar as it funds government. And they want to destroy government because it says so in the Bible or some such bat crap. But look at what they're doing, Mr. President. They go right for the base, knowing that once they get the base, once they get the nomination, once they get the base fired up, there's no problem bringing on, just regular Republicans. Why? Because regular Republicans just say, well, you know, yeah, we got some crazies in the family here, but, we got to go with the Republican, no matter who supports him. You know, going back to Reagan's 11th commandment. No matter how weird the Republican seems to be, you don't criticize him. So, it would sure be nice, wouldn't it, for us Democrats? And I'm still a Democrat at heart. I just refuse to support so many people who now represent the power structure of the Democratic Party. But wouldn't it be nice if we Democrats were approached with the same fervor for justice and truth and jobs and a sensible way of governing, if we were approached with the same fervor that these right-wing trolls go after these Christian freakoids, wouldn't that, can you imagine a president of the United States, a Democrat, a sitting president, Democrat, like Obama, really starting to talk our language and showing that he is willing to lead? Huh? Wouldn't that be cool? Oh, I know. He said he's going to go back and come up with a jobs plan. Oh, come on. Yeah. You know what he's going to do? His plan, according to everything I've read in the past 24 hours, his plan will consist of insisting that the payroll tax continue to be held in abeyance, A, B, and it's easier to get a patent. That's his jobs program. Jesus Christ. God! Oh, yeah, and that he thinks it would be great if, we could get going on rebuilding roadbeds and a bridge here and there, and maybe, maybe a sewer system in Atlanta or Philly or Detroit. Yeah, okay. No leadership. Well, Mr. President, just continue to do what you're doing. And you will be that one-term president that Michelle Bachmann insists you're going to be. And wouldn't that be just a mofo if you did turn out to be a one-term president based on something, a psychopathic God freak like Obama predicted? Bachmann, all these damn names, like Bachmann predicted, wouldn't you be embarrassed? Oh, my God. I think I'd leave the country. If I were you and Bachmann's prediction comes true, I think I'd find a job, I don't know, somewhere in the European Union or something. Maybe you could teach history at some university in Zurich, huh? Mr. President, why don't you stop with the nonsense? Seriously, why don't you? Why don't you fight? Well, not these Republican bastards. To hell with them. You know, a huge fly swatter and a can of Raid, and they're all gone anyway. I mean, start fighting for the American people. Why don't you do something? There's 25 million of us who are unemployed or underemployed. The income gap is getting worse and worse. Well, you know all this stuff. You know this stuff. Your own people tell you, you know. So I'm not going to run it down. But for God's sake, why don't you do something for your core constituency, the people who put you in office? Remember us? Remember us who voted for you? We will not vote for you again. We won't. And the reason we won't is because you have shown yourself to be a person who not only are you afraid to take on the scum-sucking trash that are Republicans, but you govern. Even when you're doing your governing best, you're governing from the center-right. That's not what we voted for. And I'm tired of taking responsibility for this myself and saying, well, you know, I knew you were a blank slate and I wrote anything I want like 58 million other people in this country did. So we just went ahead and voted for you, hoping that, what was it you said, hold your feet to the fire? We've tried. You just walk away. You just look at us like we're a bunch of drooling, dribbling idiots and walk away. Go find some hay bales someplace and take off your sport coat and your tie and roll up your sleeves and start talking the talk again, which you are so good at doing. You're going to lose your base. I mean, come election time, you've already lost it. But whether or not you get it back depends on what you do over the next, 8-10 months. How long we got? How long we got before this pack of Republican rabid dogs, these God eaters, these crazed freaks that are just roiling the country until they get things so screwed up that everybody will say, screw this. And into that political vacuum comes what the right wingers have always wanted. a kind of religio-fascism that is just, I don't know, stunning in its idiocy. And there goes the U.S., which might be a good thing. Maybe it is. You know, maybe we have got to collapse into a puddle of what? I mean, we're still the largest murdering organization on Earth, Murder Incorporated. We still commit more international, global death and destruction in various forms than any other tribe in the history of the human race. We still do that. And we still, you know, love our guns, our big guns, you know, our planes and ships and tanks and missiles and launchers and bombs. We still do that. But you got to turn around, Mr. President. That's my little spiel, little pitch to you. You're going to lose your base, pal. You've already lost us. We're going to stay lost unless you do something.
Mike, do it for you.
Mr. Obama, your base is leaving you, and unless you do something, we're not going to come back. We really aren't. There probably aren't too many things worse than being governed by fascists. On the other hand, to continue to support what appears to be a way out of this mess and have it time and time again turn out to be just more of the same mess causes people to eventually reach a point where they say the hell with it and they stay home. And if the fascists do take over, then it's a matter of open, bloody revolution at some point. It's so simple. I mean, we're getting down to that. We really are. You see it all over the globe. When all avenues are closed for political reform, economic reform, cultural reform, when all avenues are closed, if the population has not suffocated or become a mass of starving individuals like we see in so many African countries, if anything short of that, and the people eventually will rise up. And it is not a pretty sight. It is not people sitting around holding hands, singing folk songs and beating drums. It's not drum circles and reefer floating in the air. What it is violent, open, I've had a goddamn enough revolution. We know this. We know this. And then it gets really, 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 really bad. And there's a lot of death, a lot of destruction, a lot of disruption. It can take a generation or two to recover from it. That may be the only avenue left open to so many populations on the earth, right? So many countries. You see this going on all the time, and it seems to be increasing exponentially. And what is shockingly clear, or should be, I think, to political leaders, especially in this country, is how the common thread that runs from country to country, culture to culture, society to society around the planet that causes people to explode here in the so-called Arab Spring. I guess we're in the Arab summer now. But the thread that runs from Tunisia through the republics of the old Soviet Union, down to Chile, back up to London, across to Syria, down to Israel. Hello? Is it to India? The Gandhi-like demonstrator, who, along with several hundred of his followers, were preemptively arrested the other day because this man is protesting against corruption in the Indian political system. And that translates into the rich get richer and the rest of us eat out of garbage cans. So, Mr. President Obama, please, can you please cut the crap and just start to take some action? If this country ever explodes, it's going to be horrific, because there are strains of racism that run through this country, an anti-immigrant sentiment that runs just, and it's not that deeply buried in the United States. It never has been. Never has been. The only thing that kept the peace in this country, with the sort of pluralistic society that we are, I think the only thing that's ever kept the peace is the fact that we were also busy. Busy, 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 busy. You know, making a business, assimilating into the culture, whatever our culture is, learning English, going to work, going to school, busy, 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 busy. If all of a sudden the economic situation has become so critical that we can't be busy anymore, we can't go to work, we can't start businesses, we can't even go to school anymore, we can't afford tuitions anymore, Pell Grants and all sorts of avenues of getting an education are being shut down because these goddamn filthy, stinking Republicans have decided it's time to bring the hammer down and end the United States of America. Mr. President, don't you get it? For Christ's sake, don't you get it yet? You're trying to compromise with zombies, vampires. There are not two sides to every argument. There simply are not two sides. I believe in not decapitating babies. Well, I believe in decapitating them. Oh, well, then let's have a debate, right? I mean, the equivalence. One side says decapitate 7-year-olds. The other side says, nah, not a good idea. Let's give them both equal time. That's insanity. So what you have is a political party, Mr. President, who wants to lop your head off. And you're going to continue to reach across the aisle, as the phrase goes, and try to compromise with these sons of bitches. You're going to continue to do it. I'll tell you what. I've got something that was in the San Luis Obispo Tribune the other day. When we come back, I'll share it with you. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Okay, so we all understand that Mr. Obama, Mr. President, is just seems incapable or unwilling to resist these tyrants on the right, and they're slowly devouring him and destroying the country, and it's a shame. And part of the reason Can be fined, perhaps, in something in the San Luis Obispo Tribune, written by Bob Cuddy the other day. He references the fact that, once again, the L.A. Times asserts in some article of some sort that the gridlock in Washington is caused by the intransigence of the two major political parties. You know, that old equivalency argument. The basic script being, oh, those naughty scamps, why can't they work together? And as Bob Cuddy writes, the problem with that framework is that it's dead wrong, factually inaccurate. The truth is that only one side is refusing to compromise during this financial crisis, and that is the Republicans. That is not a partisan conclusion. It's a demonstrable fact. If you think Barack Obama has not bent toward the GOP like a twig in a hurricane, ask some of the Democrats who voted for him 3 years ago. Many will tell you he's spineless, he has no backbone, he has no principles. All this raises several interesting, though perturbing, questions. First, why is Obama so pliable? Second, why is the GOP so immovable? And third, why won't the press tell it like it is? Well, I think you could answer Mr. Cuddy's question here. I know I could, but let's continue. The first question seems easy enough. Why is Obama so pliable? I believe Obama genuinely believes in compromise. It's that old community organizer gene at work. Give a little, get a little. That's his core belief. Unfortunately for him and us, that conviction has serious shortcomings. It works only when all parties share it. No kidding. You cannot find common ground with people who have zero interest in budging from their so-called principles. And, of course, in the case of the current degenerating Republican Party, just chock-a-block, just shot full of religious fanatics and people who literally, demonstrably hate this country. How are you going to compromise, right? I believe in cutting off seven-year-olds' heads. Well, I don't. Well, let's debate it then. The Republicans, Bob Cuddy writes, has two goals, achieving power and holding on to it. They are perpetual goals. When the results work against them, they simply work to overturn those results. Thus, when Americans elect Bill Clinton for president, to cite one example, they did not say, well, the other side won, the people have spoken, we'll try to make it work for the citizenry, as is our tradition. No, they don't say that. They tried to make sure he could not govern effectively. Now, he gave him plenty of help, and that plan succeeded. In California, when Gray Davis was elected governor, the right wing did not say, the majority has spoken, we'll work to change their mind in the next election 4 years from now. Now, let's get to work. No. They began the recall before the votes were certified. This phenomenon from the Republicans, this is not a small thing. It undermines American government and American principles. Why, then, has the mainstream press, the watchdogs, the institutions specifically protected in our Constitution, failed to call out the GOP and its backers? Bob Cuddy says, for me, that last question is a big one, not only because we are talking about my profession, but because it is so important to ours or to any nation. Answering it's not easy, especially in an age when everything churns constantly, including definitions. What, for example, does liberal mean? How about conservative? For that matter, what are the media? Subjective terms all, but I'm going to take a whack at answering my question, Bob Cuddy writes. I think the press portrays what is going on in Washington in a Manichean way. Two sides struggling, because that is how those who own and toil in the media view the world. Constant conflict between a pair of opponents. To the mainstream media, the truth is always in the middle. But what if the truth was to one side or the other? I know, that's a radical notion, and it starts us down a dangerous road. Who's to make those calls? Would they shut out the other side? I don't have glib answers, Bob Cuddy writes, to what are vexing and profound questions, but I do know that people who disseminate information, as we do, need to put things in perspective for our readers and listeners. The center of the road is not always the best place from which to do that. In the book Brave New World Revisited, Aldous Huxley wrote, quote, children are nowhere taught in any systematic way to distinguish true from false or meaningful from meaningless statements, end quote. Huxley was writing about children, but the same observation works with the electorate in a democracy. It is the press that is charged with that teaching task, and we are failing at it. I think there is another reason the mainstream media don't tell it like it is in Washington. They are afraid of being called the liberal media. Indeed, I think the taunt has haunted media for decades. How many times have you personally heard that hoary but sticky phrase? Liberal media! Right-wing talk radio and then television began using it 20 years ago. It has lodged in some subterranean region of the average American brain. Thud. There it sits. We all know what repetition does. Respected American advertising gurus, insightful authors like George Orwell, monsters like Joseph Goebbels all have said it, and it's true. If you say something often enough, it becomes true to the listener. The phrase liberal media worked so well in vilifying the American press that they grew gun-shy and backed away from responsible coverage of national politics for fear of having that dreaded slogan hurled at them. So it's time for the national political press to move past the terror, brace themselves for the rotten fruit and overheated invective that Rush Limbaugh is going to hurl their way, and tell the truth. Limbaugh and the rest of these swine are going to throw the garbage anyway. So, yes, Republicans are not budging in the national political discussion. President Obama is. That is not a centrist position. Perhaps. But it's certainly not a leftist or, heaven forbid, a liberal one. It's simply accurate. So what's wrong with saying so? Well, yeah, what's wrong? Bob Cuddy writing in the San Luis Obispo Tribune. Yeah, what's wrong with identifying clearly and as succinctly as possible the people, the organizations, you know, like the Koch brothers? How many times do you see anything out there about the Koch brothers that, without qualification, lays it out very simply? The Koch brothers and their ilk have set out on a path to utterly and absolutely destroy representative government in this country. Now, that is a fact. And isn't the press supposed to be about facts? But when have you ever seen that? I'll tell you when. Never. Not in mainstream reporting. Oh, you see it in places where you will find the truth. If you want to go online, you'll find it. You'll find it. There are scores of publications. This program is one where that truth is put out there every night. And this is not a difficult truth. This is not a truth that comes from hours of sitting atop a mountain and going into a meditative trance to find the truth, the way, the life. No, no. This is just baseline crap truth. The Koch brothers, Citizens United, all of it, the right-wing Supreme Court, they have one single goal: destroy the country. Destroy it. End our system of self-governance. And replace it with a system that will benefit one group and one group only. The Koch brother types. Now, you know this is true. I know it's true. Mainstream media knows it's true. Rupert goddamn Murdoch knows it's true. Limbaugh knows it's true. So why doesn't our mainstream press, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, yada, 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 ABC, CBS, NBC, why are they not telling us the horrible truth? There is an organization in this country dedicated to destroying what we've built up over 200 plus years and replacing it with a kind of predatory fascistic capitalism linked with a brand of Christianity that could only, using their language, be described as demonic. Why doesn't somebody come out and say that? Why doesn't Brian Williams say it? Just start your newscast tonight, Brian, by stating the goddamn truth.
Is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car, and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world every night.
For the hour, you know, I wish that Yellow Dog Democrats, and you know what they are, there are people who vote for a Democrat no matter what, you know, as long as they have a D after their name, it doesn't make any difference, because, you know, the Republicans will come in and destroy the Supreme Court! But I wish Democrats who are of that mindset, who are terrified of their own shadows, terrified of a Republican taking over the executive branch again. I wish you'd understand something. And this is just a personal plea. You know, I've said before that I am a hardcore Democrat. I am a democratic socialist. I am a social Democrat. Phrase it any way you want. But included in there is the word Democrat. I mean, that's the way it was brought up. I saw how it worked. I believe in the principles of the Democratic Party, the old principles. You know, I'm as dedicated to the party principles as as any good communist was dedicated to the Communist Party back in the 20s and 30s, right? I mean, I'm a hardcore Democrat. So, for you folks out there whose Democratic affiliation is based in fear rather than strength, see, I like to think of mine as based in strength. Because I grew up in a section of the country where people did get their heads beat up. Bob Kincaid from Head On Radio Network is another one. I mean, you know, West Virginia. I grew up in the industrial Midwest, where, like West Virginia, where miners were being beaten into a bloody pulp by company thugs. I grew up in an area of the country where auto workers and union organizers were also beaten into a bloody pulp, shot, hanged, destroyed, their houses set on fire. You know, when you grow up in that kind of a physical environment, when you have an understanding, and I got my understanding from, of all places, public school. Can you believe that? Public school taught me about the union movement in this country and how it was for the worker and how it built the middle class and built the country. I learned that in a public school. Do they teach that anymore? Why? Hell no. Are you serious? But I digress. I'm the type of Democrat whose Democratic Party principles were ingrained out of a sense of progress and strength and moving forward. So to you Democrats who are scared of your own shadows, let me tell you something. I'm probably your best friend, not your worst enemy. I mean, if you don't have the guts to plant your feet in front of Mr. Obama and his policies and say, look, you got to change, pal, or I'm abandoning you. You've abandoned me. I'm out of here. If you don't have the courage to do that, why are you jumping in my ass for doing exactly that? What do you think my goal is? Huh? What do you think it is? Don't answer. because a lot of these cowardly Democrats would probably say, "So, well, you're trying to destroy the Democratic Party." I get the emails. I do look at them, some of them. "You're our worst enemy. You're going to help the Republicans get elected. Why don't you shut up? You were supposed to be a Democrat." What's wrong with you people? I mean, the people like that. What is wrong with you? When did you lose your courage? When did your spine slip out your rear end? When did you get that yellow streak up and down your back? Either you believe in Democratic Party principles or you don't. But if you don't, for God's sake, be honest enough to come out and say it. Stop supporting a man who is crumbling the Democratic Party into a ball of waste paper and toss it into the nearest basket. I am so sick and tired of hearing so-called liberals, so-called progressives, continuing to defend policies that are anti-democratic by a president who doesn't have, apparently, the center necessary inside himself to plant his 2 feet down and just say, "You know what, you right-wing sons of bitches, you can kiss my black ass or white ass, I don't care. You can just get on your knees and kiss my booty, because I'll tell you what, I'm moving ahead. I'm going to do what the American people elected me to do, and that is literally to save the country." But he won't do it, will he? Nah, he won't do it. He's on this bus tour now in the Midwest, where he's pointing his fingers at the people in the other political party, the Republicans, who would like to see him just crumbled by the side of the road, a result of a bus accident, for their refusal to consider any new revenues. And their insistence about these deep spending cuts. "Mr. Obama, you suggested in your grand compromise deeper cuts than these right-wing rats ever even thought about. You did it. And now you're pointing your finger? Oh, wait a minute. That's right. The liberal commentators in talk radio would tell you that was his grand strategy. He was backing the Republicans up against the wall so they couldn't possibly accept. And then America would see how duplicitous and what liars they were." How's that working for you? How's that working out for you? Did that work? Hey, Mr. President? Hey, you phony liberals? Hey, you faux progressives? Did that work? No. It didn't. You don't cut a deal or attempt to cut a deal with people who have stated categorically that they are your enemy, that they want to bring your ass down, and that their sole purpose, what did Mitch McConnell say? The sole purpose of his Senate is to make sure that Barack Obama is a one-term president. When are you folks going to wake up, huh? I mean, you Democrats who somehow lost your courage. When are you going to wake up? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.